to the Clock and Talk podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. You can follow us at clock_talk on Twitter. I'm your host, Taz. You can get me at Guna Taz. Each and every week, I'm joined by two lads who love football like me, and they seem to spread their knowledge on this podcast, and whether they're right or wrong, well, you know, that's I'll let you decide that. So let's welcome Tony. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Still, my voice is a bit tender from the weekend and shouting at Arsenal players mainly. So if I sound funny, it's blame that. And I mean, Tez says imparting our knowledge on you. I think knowledge is a very loose word when it comes to me. I wouldn't say it's knowledge. I'd say imparting my nonsense on you. But if you enjoy it, you enjoy it.
And Schwinn, how are you, buddy?
Doing very well. Again, I mean, I'm not sure about knowledge. It's nonsense, and most of the time it's wrong. I think we've hardly been right. And all you need to see for that is check out our World Cup podcast and see the predictions we made there, right?
Did anyone get anything
wrong? I said
wrong?
France. I said France.
You said France, did you?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, Socceroos let me down. That's a stupid bet. Anyway, let's get on with this show, boys. Before we get going, though, I've got some house cleaning to tidy up a bit, and I don't want to harp on it too much, but Schwinn and I did a podcast last Friday, I think it was, Schwinn, with the preview on the West Ham game, but it never saw the light of day. And the reason it never saw the light of day is because a young bloke who we did the podcast for basically stole the content off somebody, and just a shit fight that me and Schwinn did not want to get involved in. Cut a long story short, you, the good listeners out there who ask us questions each and every week, and this week we've got about 35 questions, and we love our listeners, we love our questions, and it gives us plenty to talk about here on the podcast. However, it came to my attention last week that this little flog stole them questions for his own podcast. So it was a bit disappointing. Now, young Blake, I know you're out there listening, and you've told us you listen to us on a regular basis. A little bit of advice for you, champ, is get your own fucking content, mate, okay? Because stealing our content isn't what it's all about, buddy. So we're all happy to give you a run. We're happy to give you a spot on the podcast, and you asked a couple of questions here on our podcast last week. And, yeah, so, mate, in future, you can get your own content and stop thieving ours, you dirty little cunt. Okay, so I just wanted to touch on that quickly because a lot of our listeners did ask what was going on, and that's the reason we were speaking about it last week. So it happened after we recorded last episode. So, okay, so Schwinn, that podcast will definitely not see light of day, mate, that we did.
Yeah. I doubt it. I don't think we should see it anyway. I mean, it's dated at this point. And of course, you know, I mean, we try to support the kid. You know, as you said, Tez, he's a young guy who's trying to do things. And we thought we can help in some way or the other. But, you know, when you try to take advantage of someone like that, that's not quite all right. And, you know, even if that episode does make it on the air, I don't think any of us are going to actively share it. So it's all right. It's behind us now.
That's right. And it was more disappointing, you know, you're trying to help a young kid out and he does that to you. And I thought, we value our listeners and the questions they ask each week. And to see that thread being used on another podcast without permission, I thought I was a bit taken back for it, to be honest. So anyway, he will learn as he moves forward through his podcasting career, hopefully. So okay, let's get into this game, boys. So, Tony, a lineup came out, mate, and some would say it was probably the best lineup that we've seen this season.
Yeah, on paper, and what I was surprised about is that I think Mickey's not been very good. I've said it on here, but obviously his figures and his stats will probably look quite good because he's had goals, assists, and a lot of key passes. I know we debated last week that Schwinn thought he was very good and I thought he was very bad. And I was surprised to see him dropped because I thought the key headlines, the goals and the assists would keep him in the team. But I was pleased he was because, as I said, I don't think he's been performing. So that was a bit of a surprise for me. But beyond that, yeah, it was probably the best we've seen. I think our best 11 is probably that, but Guendouzi out and Torreira in, and maybe a slight change in the roles, as in I'd have Ramsey a little bit deeper, which he did play a lot of the time yesterday, and it allowed Ozil to tuck in. But I think that's probably very close to what is our best 11.
Mm-hmm. My only other criticism, we might get in a bit later with Cech. At some point, I'm not saying Leno is going to be a better goalkeeper or better, you know, with the ball at his feet and stuff, but at some point I think he's going to get his chance. I've seen during the week that, you know, he's happy to wait and he knows he's going to get his chance. So I wonder whether he comes in the Europa League, he 10 out of 10 performance, and all of a sudden we see Cech not starting and Leno starting. So that'll be one that, you know, time will tell, I suppose, on that one. Schwen, your thoughts on the lineup?
Similar. I wasn't expecting Mkhitaryan to be dropped. And yes, you know, we disagreed on what sort of an impact he's had. And for me, he's someone who stands out as one of the better performers. I agree that he had a very tough time against Chelsea, particularly those 30 minutes that Tony spoke about. But I also thought that he's been bright in certain moments, and I was not expecting him to be dropped. I was also not expecting Aaron Ramsey and Mesut Ozil to start together, since we've seen that Emery likes to play one or the other in that number 10 role. So it was something different. We can tell that the manager is trying some different things, you know, week in, week out. Good to see Lacazette start finally with Aubameyang, something the fans have been shouting out for. And obviously that's something that was pivotal for us to get the 3 points. You know, Aubameyang's goal saw some good interplay. And of course, Lacazette helped us get that winner. So good lineup, good performance. I also liked how we, you know, got back after losing our lead twice. You know, our defense is suspect. I think we all know that at this point. But we were struggling to attack well. And I think yesterday we managed to show some bright sparks there. So all in all, progress. So no complaints from me.
Tony, it was great to see Mustafi get one in, mate, assisted by Xhaka.
Yeah, I mean, brilliant ball, but our set-piece delivery and the routine, which I was really pleased about from the first corner, but our set-piece delivery was on point all day. Whoever took them, Ozil took a few, Xhaka took a few, and the set-piece delivery was very good. And to be honest, I thought Mustafi had an excellent game at both ends of the pitch. I know he conceded two goals, but you can't put the blame on him for either of them or anywhere near him. And as I said, it's not often I give Mustafi credit. What's so frustrating with him is he's either excellent or awful. He never really seems to be in between. And if we can get the excellent out of him more often than not, then we'd appreciate it. But I mean, I personally can't see it, but I've got to give him credit where it's due. It was a great header, and he had a very good game in my book.
Do you reckon you touched on the set pieces there? And obviously, set pieces are a strength of a lot of teams, but do you think it's becoming one of our main strengths?
I say this quite often. We've got this image as being terrible from set pieces. Pretty much every year we lead the table in goals from corners, but we have this image as, because we're weak, we're not going to be good in the air when the crosses come in. But it's nonsense. I don't know where it's come from. And it looks like Emery has worked on them, especially when you look at little routines that we done, like for the first one where Lacazette pulled up to the front post, it was flicked back to Ramsey and it was a good save from the keeper. Like, that's obviously been worked on, but any players will tell you it was always rumoured that Wenger didn't bother with them, with set pieces, he didn't work on them, but any player will tell you that they probably worked on that more than anything else. Maybe not routines, but type of delivery areas and little moves they would do. They said Wenger was so precise with them. So it's something we've always been good at. I don't know why we've always had this reputation as poor from corners, or you shouldn't concede like in the air to Arsenal. But we score a hell of a lot of goals from set pieces, and we have done for a long time now.
Mm-hmm. Schwen, there was a couple of yellow cards. I'll just go through them all quickly. You know, Monreal got one, Bellerin got one, Guendouzi, Granit, he got one. So there was, what, 4 yellow cards issued. For us, anything there that you want to touch on that you noticed?
Not quite. I think our game management was awful, especially, you know, in our defensive part of the field. But I did like how our players were not holding back, you know, especially the Bellerin yellow card. I think that was one he slipped on, and I think it was quite intentional that he put his hand out to stop that attack. But I don't mind that. You know, there were instances where we could have done better. I think Granit could have done a bit better, arguably. But at that point, I mean, I'm splitting hairs. But it's all right. You know, these things will compound over time and maybe come to bite us. But I don't mind them in games which are very well balanced and could go either way. So no complaints from me there.
Okay. So we're just going through. So obviously we went up, and then there was the goal from Cardiff. They then got one just before half time. Now we're going to touch on this a bit later. In the live callers, which we've already recorded before we've done this bit, because that's just the way we do it. But anyway, we'll just go quickly on that first goal. Obviously, it was a poor pass by Granit. I seen it a little bit different to you boys, but then thinking about it now, I'm going to watch it back again. Schwinn, you did say Guendouzi was an option there as well.
I thought so. I mean, at that moment, you know, I thought that was the pass to play, not just because he was closer, but, you know, if you notice, if you pull up that frame, you'll notice there was a Cardiff player that was closer to Bellerin than to Guendouzi. And I appreciate the idea that Granit had, because there was, you know, tons of space for him to hit. And if he had hit the space instead of trying to find his man in Bellerin, I think we could have gone on an attack. But, you know, I question whether there was a need for that with 30 minutes to go or 30 seconds to go before half. And, you know, it just so happens, which is very unfortunate with Granit, that, you know, he makes one or two mistakes in a game and one of them gets punished and severely. You know, I'm looking at some stats from yesterday. He had 120 touches, 86% pass accuracy, 6 out of 7 long balls completed, 7 duels won, 2 fouls won, 2 interceptions, 3 key passes and 1 assist. Now, that's a top game, right?
Oh, absolutely.
But it just so happens.
But every Arsenal fan will look at that one mistake, and as Tony will probably agree on, every Arsenal fan will touch on that one mistake, and that'll be what leads the headlines in the papers.
Perhaps, and for good reason. I mean, you know, there are reasons why he deserves criticism there, but in that moment, and not necessarily. On his overall performance, I thought he was very important. Again, kept us ticking and also contributed, you know, in terms of that first goal. But you know, you live and learn, and it's just fortunate for us not to lose points against a weak Cardiff side that really did give us a challenge. So, you know, you learn from these tough situations, and I'm sure he will as well.
Okay, Tony, just quickly, mate, Aubameyang, Lacazette, Schwinn touched on it earlier. They've got to start every game now, haven't they, together?
Well, for me, and this is probably going to be a bit controversial, it's a bit of a yes and no, because I don't think they can start with Aubameyang on the left. Aubameyang is not in the game, and he's the type of player that isn't in the game a lot anyway, but then will score, which is what he done yesterday. But we can't basically be playing with 10 men all the time, especially again once we start playing better teams. For me personally, I think we need to find a way to get them both up front. I completely agree they both need to play because they offer very different skill sets which complement each other perfectly. But for me, Aubameyang on the left, I mean, like yesterday, I thought he was poor, but he got his goal, which is what he does, and that's fine. But that's fine if he's doing that as a striker. For me, as a left winger, you want more.
You say controversy. I almost agree with you because I looked and I thought, how can I say it? He wasn't missing, because that's the wrong word, but I looked and thought, where was he?
He
was ineffective, yeah. Like, I want him more in the play up front, like you say. So I think, yeah, if he can get them both up top. And it wasn't his fault. He was just over in the left. He can't – that's where he was. That was his position.
Yeah, I mean, look, he relies on his pace and standing on the last man and breaking in behind. But the two issues are that you can't really do that when you're on the left, because you have to get involved in the defensive side of the game more. And the second problem is, even if it does work and he gets in behind, he's not running at goal. He's running down the channel, so it's still not as dangerous as it should be. So for me, as I said, I think you've got to get them both in, but not sacrificing him on the left. And I think for our best spells of the game was probably when Ozil tucked in, Ramsey dropped a couple of yards deeper, and Aubameyang tucked in a lot more. I mean, if you look at Aubameyang's goal, they were both pretty central. There was, I think, I'm not sure, I didn't look properly at the replay, but even for Lacazette's goal, I think Aubameyang was a lot narrower than he had been previously in the game, which gave the defender something else to think about. So for me, I would prefer him much narrower than two playing close together and working on their interplay, because Lacazette's not the quickest. We know that. But Aubameyang is. Aubameyang's hold up really isn't very good, but Lacazette's is excellent. For me, that's his best aspect, is his hold up. So I think they've got everything between them, and if you play them together, it could be a really brilliant partnership. And they obviously seem to get on, which always helps.
Oh yeah, just during the week, you see the videos coming out and the little celebrations, and I think these guys are really enjoying life at Arsenal, and I'm liking it.
Yeah.
You mentioned his name, Ozil. Look, I've been critical here on the podcast about Ozil, you know, as everybody knows, but I didn't think he was that bad as what people were saying.
I mean, for me, he wasn't bad at all. He wasn't amazing, but he wasn't bad. But he had 10 minutes and it came with a couple of chances in it. And I think it ended with the Aubameyang goal, and then we sat back again. But he had 10 minutes where he was completely unplayable. He was picking the ball up everywhere. He threaded a couple of balls through. One, he made a ridiculous turn about 30 yards out and then fed it wide to, I think, Lacazette out on the right. And then there was another ball he zipped through into Ramsey in the area, and Ramsey's first touch wasn't the best, but the ball didn't even look like it was on. So nothing came of it, but the passes were there, and he was finding space and he was dictating the tempo. But it was only 10 minutes, and then we went back on the back foot. But I mean, for me, he was nowhere near bad. He wasn't like, for me, that's a kind of 7 performance. Like, yeah, he's not gonna be the headline. But as I said, as I will say later, because I can tell into the future, I've seen people say he was missing in action, which for me, that's just verging on you don't like him. So you're gonna say a negative point. Like, there was a guy sitting next to me in the ground. I think he was South American. He was foreign in. I think it was his first away game. That doesn't mean my opinion's better than his.
Yep.
But He obviously just had an agenda against Ozil. No matter what Ozil done, it was terrible. No matter, like, regardless. So, like, even that corner where Ramsey had the shot where Lacazette flicked it, he was moaning because Ozil played the corner along the ground. Like, it was at that level.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of the people who are criticising him are literally on that level where they just want to criticise him, so they'll find something.
Mm, he's a scapegoat at the moment.
Yeah.
What was I going to say now? I just want to, and I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit. There's been lots of reports on Ozil. He's got to change his game. He's got to change to suit Emery's style. Now, can you explain to me what that means? Because I don't really know.
For me, Emery came in and said we're going to be this heavily pressing team, and in people's head, Ozil didn't fit in that because he's not the most. He's languid, as we always know about his style. He doesn't sprint all over the place. He gets his work done. As I said, you only have to look at the distance covered, but he's not the type that's going to sprint around like all over the place and pressing hard. He's not that type of player. And Emery said he wants to press. So people have gone with that. But if you actually watch us, and I said this last week, are we actually pressing? Because I don't feel like we are. I don't feel like we're a press side.
I haven't seen it, no.
I mean, look, it is very difficult. And I said this last week. It's very difficult against teams like Cardiff and West Ham because they don't play with the ball at the back. So there's nothing to press. But I think that's the issue. Emery's come in and he said from his first interview, we're going to be a heavy pressing team. I don't think you can in the Premier League because there's probably only 5 or 6 teams that you're able to press because the others don't care for playing the ball at the back and the keeper's going to smash it long to their 6'5" centre forward. You can't press that. When the ball's in the sky, you can't press it.
Mm.
So I think, and I know a lot of people disagree with this because they say, oh, the players should adapt to the coach. But for me, Emery's got to adapt because if he thinks we're going to be a pressing team, he's going to be wasting a hell of a lot of time because there's only, as I said, Tottenham will play out from the back. Liverpool will probably play out from the ball. Will definitely play out from the back. Chelsea are obviously trying to under Sarri. Man City obviously do. United probably won't because their centre-backs are awful and Lukaku's massive. So there's probably only 4 teams in the Premier League you can press. So saying, oh, we're this pressing side and Ozil doesn't fit that, I would agree Ozil doesn't suit a strong press. I would still get him in the time. I just wouldn't have him involved in the press. But as I said, in England, you're not going to get that option often because in Spain, pretty much every keeper gets the ball, takes his goal kick, rolls it out to his centre-back. In England, as I said, I've just named the four teams that will do that. No one else is going to do it. So you can't press that. But like, say, a Crystal Palace, good side. But when they're smashing the ball onto Benteke, what does it matter if Aubameyang, Lacazette, Ozil, Mkhitaryan and Ramsey are going to press when the ball's in the sky and going 60 yards away from the keeper? It just doesn't make sense.
So how do you fit Ozil in? How does he adapt?
See, I think a lot of people are reacting to what Emery has said and not actually what's happening on the pitch. So they've said, he's got to adapt, he's got to work harder, he's got to get involved in the press. But as I said, when you actually watch us, there is no press because the other teams aren't letting us press them. So, as I said, I think most people are reacting on, to use my phrase, not what they're seeing with their eyes, but what they're hearing that the manager wants. Okay. But you can't press when the ball's in the sky.
Yeah, right. So when he gets dropped, well, he got subbed off the other week, half time.
That's different because Chelsea was a pressing game because they outplayed that play out from the back.
Right.
But I'm saying you can't have this plan to be a pressing side when the vast majority of our games, probably, 20% of our games will be pressing games. And the other 80%, you will not be able to press. Mm-hmm. So, do you see what I mean? But Chelsea, I can understand the injury there because that is a game where you press. Because if it was under Mourinho's Chelsea, then you couldn't press them because they went long to Drogba most of the time. But Sarri obviously wants to play out from the back. And that's a pressing game. And I can understand him getting subbed off there. But as I said, in the other games, you're not able to press them.
Okay. Because I was just going to make a comment when he went off, Welbeck came on in the 84th minute. I don't think that was the manager pissed off with him. I think it was just...
Oh, no, that was... let's be honest, we was winning. They were going to come to look back in the game, and Welbeck is a better defensive player than Meza is, and I don't think anyone will deny that. He's quicker, he's stronger, and he does get through more work. So that was... it wasn't an annoyance thing. It was, this guy is better to see the game out, and I don't think anyone would argue with that. I've not seen a close-up reaction, so I don't know if Ozil was pissed off. I've not heard he was. I've not seen any complaints about it. So for me, that was just a tactical substitution in the same way that bringing Aubameyang off and bringing Mkhitaryan on was. I don't think there's anything to read into that.
Yeah, okay. No, I just wanted to clear that up. I haven't seen any reactions or any either, but I just thought I'd get that out there now because we are recording the day after the game. So, Judo Schwinn, you got any add on that, mate?
No, I think you guys covered it really well.
Thanks,
and man. I agree with pretty much everything. What I'll just say is that Welbeck's taller too. So, you know, that deep into the game, one goal lead against set pieces, he would have been an asset as well. So it's quite an obvious substitution in my eye.
Well, to be fair, I was going to bring this up later, but there was a bit at the end. I think it was their last set piece and it ended up sailing out for a goal kick. But Welbeck done so well, just got his body between... He didn't actually do anything, but he just got his body between him and the man. And they probably wouldn't have shown it because they would have shown a replay or something on TV. But pretty much every Arsenal player was going over to him, like, patting him, well done, Danny, like, excellent defensive thing. And as much as I like Meza, he ain't going to do that. So,
absolutely,
it kind of justified itself. And as I said, I don't know if you guys have seen that, but it's something I noticed, like, in the ground clearly, that Welbeck done a very good defensive job right at the end of the back post.
Okay, well, Schwinn, I'm gonna throw Torreira at you, mate. I've seen some stats that backed his performance up. I thought he was pretty good when he came on. With Guendouzi, he's obviously got a start each week as well. I don't want to shit all over Guendouzi. He seems like a good kid, and he's going to be the future there. But I noticed the big difference when Torreira came on. You?
I did too. I thought he was very good, especially in on the half turn. He was able to get out of some tight situations, and I thought that he obviously did very well in finding Lacazette and getting that assist. But I don't necessarily think these two things are quite as mutually exclusive as we're making them out to be, because, at that point, before, right after we scored and we're in the lead for the final time in the game, Cardiff threw numbers forward. So we were able to, find players forward and run with the ball. But when Guendouzi was on, that was not the case more often than not. So, it's different, right? The game evolves, as I spoke about it last week out, that the first 15 minutes of the game are obviously going to be different than how things are towards the end. I do think that Torreira deserves a spot based on what we've seen from him, but is he ready? There's a reason the manager is not starting him despite seeing these performances in the last 15, 20 minutes of each game. But the reason he's not starting, as I said last time, I think it might be a bit to do with the language. And I'm not quite sure if he's ready in that aspect. You know, starting a game is very different because that's when you're controlling a game, as opposed to coming on as a sub when you're supposed to impact the game. So I think it's easier to come off the bench in that regard, slowly ease him in. We saw Arsene did this with many players, even, you know, with the likes of an Alexis Sanchez, who was obviously raring to go. And I think this is the same sort of man management that Emery is employing here. And to be honest, I'm okay with that. Till the time the manager deems him ready to start, I think it's fine for us to see Guendouzi in the park, get him some time because we know he's going to be important in some of the cup games, maybe not the Europa League, but definitely in the domestic cup games. So he didn't have the brightest of games yesterday, but you don't expect every player, irrespective of age, I'm not dragging in the age here, irrespective of age, we don't expect every player to have a perfect game or a very good game every time. Sometimes you struggle, and I thought that was just one of the things we saw from Guendouzi yesterday.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with everything you said there. Now, just on Guendouzi, and I'll get both your thoughts here because I may get fucking smashed here. I just thought he'd done a lot of side passing yesterday. There's just a lot of no going forward from Guendouzi, and that was my only, you know, obviously problem with him. What do you boys think of him? Like, I'd almost say like a younger version of Elneny. Tony?
I think that's a bit harsh, but what I will say, if he is playing these safe passes, what his strength is, and I think this is where we've got to look at it a bit differently, is he always wants the ball. So when we're heavily pressed at the back, he will come and he'll take the ball under pressure. And then he may only play a 2-yard sideways ball or a 10-yard sideways ball, but it's relieving the pressure. It's anti-press, which is a massive part of it should be a massive part of our game at the moment. And he is very good anti-press because he always wants the ball and he usually looks after it quite well. I can't ever really remember him being dispossessed yesterday. So it's not eye-catching. And to be honest, I'm not sure if that's a job that warrants a starting place, if I'm honest. I don't think it does, to be honest. But I see what he does, and I know where you're coming from in that it does look like he gets the ball and he passes it 5 yards to his left, 5 yards to his right. But I think you have to look at the positions where he's getting it and the options he's given. Like for me, there's no doubt that Granit has a 10 times better range of passing, but Granit doesn't want the ball. We've always said Granit back to goal is terrible.
Yeah,
and he doesn't want that pressure. Whereas Guendouzi will take it. So if he can invite all the pressure to him and then just knock it off 10 yards to Xhaka, now Xhaka's got space that he wouldn't previously have had because Guendouzi's taken all the pressure for him.
Okay, yeah,
so
I gotcha.
I do get what you mean about him being short passes, but I think you have to look at the wider picture and say that in that aspect, he is doing quite a good job.
Yeah, it's a good little trio we've got, Torreira, Guendouzi, Xhaka. And we've said it before, they're going to be... It's not going to be a set starting lineup because we've got so many options, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, for me, and obviously I know you two just spoke about it, but for me, that Torreira cameo, if you want to call it that, now cements his place in the team. I think from now on he starts, unless, and I haven't looked, if Uruguay have a lot of travelling to do, obviously we're in an international break now, and then we're in Newcastle away, which is our furthest away game as well. So if he doesn't come back till late because he's in some far place of South America, then he may not start at Newcastle, but that, I think, would be the only reason he wouldn't start. I agree with Schwinn. He came on at a bit of an easier time, but he was very good. As I said, I don't need, and none of us need stats to tell us how good he was in a half hour. And as I said, for me, and a lot of people there that I spoke to during the game and after the game, was like, surely that's it now. That's his breakthrough moment, if that's what you want to call it. And as I said, the only thing that will stop him at Newcastle is to travel, and he may not travel, I don't know, I've not looked, but I know Alexis used to have a lot of issues that he would go deep into South America and he'd only get back on the Friday and we'd have a game on the Saturday. So if Torreira's got that situation, I don't think he'll start, but anything beyond that, and I think now he's on the team sheet.
Yeah, okay. Mkhitaryan, what happens with him? He came on the 89th minute, Aubameyang obviously went off, and you can't do much at that time, you know, that end of the game. Like, I've seen a bit of criticism from him, but he's got to pick himself up, and he'll be right.
Yeah, no, it is what it is with his sub, and I personally don't think he's been good in the games before. Other people do. His numbers are okay. It's just rotation. It's going to happen. Like, and I welcome it in a way. It's better than having players coming in completely cold. At least he is getting minutes. So if we do need him, if someone does get injured or blah blah blah, he's ready to play. And that's the joy. I mean, I know Lacazette hasn't started, but he's come on in every game. And the joy of that is that when he did come to start, he was ready because he's been playing minutes rather than just coming completely out of the cold and not remembering what physical football feels like.
Yeah, no, I agree totally. Any girls you boys want to talk about this game? Because we've got a fair few questions to get through, which will cover a lot about this game as well.
Just one thing quickly. The atmosphere from start to finish and even after the final whistle was absolutely unbelievable. So just credit to, I'm kind of half crediting myself here, but credit to anyone that was there making that atmosphere. Again, I'm not saying they're better fans than anyone else, but that's the best atmosphere I've heard at an away game for a long, long time. And it's the best away day. I mean, the performance wasn't the best, but it's one of the best feeling away days that we've had in a long time. So in a time our fans get a lot of match going, fans get a lot of criticism for being quiet at the Emirates, which we are. I think we do have to give them credit at this time because they were very good.
Yeah, awesome. Good to hear. I did hear a lot of chanting on the TV when I was watching it, actually. So, yeah, we could hear you.
Yeah, and I said it was to a man, and even at the end, like when the players came over to give their shirts or applaud, they all came over as a group. A couple had stayed behind. Guendouzi and Torreira gave their shirts to young kids in the crowd. Cech always gives his gloves to young kids in the crowd, but it was like everyone stayed and everyone was just like screaming their names. They're the only three people on the pitch at this point, them three, and not a single person had left, and everyone's there chanting like very loud. Just a very good atmosphere, which I don't often get to say it about Arsenal, so I thought credit where it's due.
Yep, no, nice. Now, quickly, I just realised I wanted to touch on Cech. I don't know if I've got a question there.
We must
have a question about Cech, eh?
Yeah.
If we don't, we will touch on it later. We'll go through the questions, have a look. Now, Schwinn, I just want to go to you quickly, mate. Europa League, we did the draw, and there was this thing about Mkhitaryan. Can't travel to a certain place.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. I mean, we have Karabakh in our group, of course, and you know, from people who are well aware of political relations of the area, they would know that Armenia and Azerbaijan don't necessarily get along together. You know, there is a particular region which is on the eastern border of Armenia. That is under dispute for, you know, I think since the Soviet Union fell, if I'm not wrong. I think it's called Nagorno-Karabakh. And there, Armenians are not allowed to enter Azerbaijan. So I wonder what UEFA is going to do about that, since the final is also scheduled in Baku, which is in Azerbaijan. And, you know, of course, the final is, quite a while away from now. But it can be a real issue, depending on injuries, depending on availability of players. I don't know what sort of precedent UEFA has set when it's come to stuff like this. I noticed during the draw that Russian and Ukrainian clubs were not in the same pots, which was, again, you know, they're towing the political line there. So it's not necessarily them going head on with political issues. So it's going to be a tough one. I'm not sure what the rationale is going to be behind fixing this or not fixing this, but it's one to keep an eye out on. And I'm not too worried about Karabakh away, but if we end up making the final and that's something that's going to decide our season, then Mkhitaryan can be an impact player, if not a starter. So it's one to definitely keep an eye out on.
Yep. And thoughts on the group, mate? We should win that pretty comfortable.
We should. I mean, Sporting is in there, along with Karabakh and Boruskla. I think that's the name of the Ukrainian club we're going to be facing. So it seems like a decent group, a bit of competition in there, you know, a bit of traveling in there, of course. So it's not going to be, a walk in the park, because these teams are going to try and get as much as they want. But it should give us an opportunity to rest some key players, depending on who we're playing. I think we play Everton one game off the back of one of our Europa League games. And then we also have either Liverpool or Tottenham. I think Tottenham is the one that we play again after a fourth game away from home. So a couple of, tough fixtures in there, relatively speaking. So maybe you get some rotation in there in terms of players like Aubameyang and Mesut Ozil and give some younger players a run out during those games.
Yeah, nice. Tony, you got the passport ready, mate? You travel?
I think I'm probably only going to go to Lisbon. I mean, Ukraine doesn't sound like a barrel of laughs. And
sorry to all our Ukraine listeners.
yeah, no offence. It just doesn't sound great to me. Baku's meant to be really good, but probably only Lisbon. Not decided yet. I'll have tickets for them all, but whether I actually travel is a different matter.
You're like me and Schwinn, pretty confident on the group stage, mate.
Yeah, I mean, we should get 9 points at home, and then you only really need a draw away to win the group, in one draw in three games. So, I would expect to win the group. He said he's going to rotate, which is brilliant. But if you look at what's rotating with, like, at the moment, the rotation would still be Leno, Lichtsteiner, Holding, Mavropanos. Left-backs maybe a bit of an issue at the moment, but it would be one of Kolasinac and Maitland-Niles if they're back in time. You get the likes of Elneny, maybe probably Guendouzi if Torreira's forced his way into the team by then. So it's not like we're going to be going with a useless bunch of players. The rotation team is still more than strong enough.
Who's going to play up top on these games?
Welbs, I would guess. I'd guess Welbs.
Yeah, okay.
He's only ever really going to be a sub in. He's going to be on the bench every week in the proper games, first team games. So I'd imagine this is a chance to say go on, or he might even play from the left and play Eddie up top, depending on how good Eddie looks in training. So you never know; we might see a bit of Smith Rowe. We never know, but I mean, it's still going to be a strong. It's not like a rotation team that's like the Carling Cup teams of old when everyone was 17. It's going to be still a strong rotation team. And just to go on Schwinn's point, I think it's Liverpool after the match day four, and it's at home. And all of our games after are in London, after Europa League games are in London, except for Southampton away, which is only about 50 miles. So in a way, at least we haven't got any travelling after Europa League games. But obviously, we've got to travel back, but then we haven't got to get back and then go a long distance.
So each and every week, we're joined by a couple of listeners. You can do that and get involved at clockend_talk, and the link's in our bio. And you can join us on Skype, as Maddie has done. How are you, Maddie?
Hey, hi, guys. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate, good. What do you think of the game yesterday?
It was good. Actually, even though we conceded a couple of goals, but still, I was always optimistic that we will score more, because I felt our attacking intents was very good. Again, yes, we made some. I know you will hate it, but it was unnecessary from Xhaka for first goal to give the ball away. But it was good. Important that we fought really hard. Cardiff was definitely not a pushover team. And yeah, it was good 3 points before the international break.
Yeah, no worries, mate. Have you got a question for the boys?
Yeah. So I have you a couple of questions. I quickly gone through it. One question is if Schwinn and Tony can explain, this is what, you know, did you find any difference in the formation or tactics in terms of first half versus second half? Because I felt somehow Ozil was more effective in second half. Did Ramsey and Ozil interchange their position, or how did it work out? That was my first question. Second question was for the second goal, I felt actually Harry Arter had faked the foul. I don't know whether I'm correct or not. Was the referee gave unnecessary free kick to them? Third question was just a second. I noted it down. Yeah. As much as you know, I was furious with Xhaka for the first goal. But do you think who was to blame for the first goal? Was it natural? Because I think he was so eager to. Get the header. Instead, he could have just stayed back and then ultimately blocked the shot. So these were my three questions.
All right. Tony, I'll let you go with the first. Schwinn, you go the second. And I'll touch quickly on the third, and then we'll just... you guys might disagree with my third one, but anyway. Tony, you go with your first one, mate.
Yeah, it was a strange one because Ozil definitely found himself more central and he had a much bigger impact on the game. And there was a period in the game for about 10 minutes where he looked on a different level to everyone else, and nothing came of it, and no one will remember it. And I've seen people saying he went missing again, but there was a period for 10 minutes when he did come inside where he looked completely unplayable. But it wasn't like an interchange because Ramsey didn't go right. I mean, I don't really know how they fitted it in. I think they just basically had Ramsey as a runner and Ozil as a 10 and abandoned the right-hand side pretty much because in that period we were so dominant. It was a bit strange that like sort of we were dominant and then scored and then stopped. And then so then they were dominant and then they scored and then stopped. And then the same thing happened again and again. But I think in the dominant times, we pretty much abandoned the right-hand side, just left Hector there on his own. Mez tucked in to play as like a 10, but then Ramsey didn't, as I said, cover him. Ramsey stayed in just the same position he was. Maybe it's not quite a 10, not quite a central midfielder, still attacking, but not a 10. I don't know how like to explain that. But yeah, he definitely did tuck in, but it wasn't so much as an interchange.
Okay. Schwinn, you remember the second?
Yeah, so on Harry Arter, I mean, in a nutshell, yes, I think it was a dive. I don't think there was enough contact, if any, for him to go down. And, you know, I mean, from that position, it seems like we're struggling in terms of, you know, dealing with balls that are aerial threats. And even towards the end of the game, even once we capitalized on that last goal, I was a bit fearful, you know, with all those balls being being hit in. Their captain, Morrison, was a threat. And I'm not quite sure why Ramsey was the one marking him on that occasion, but you know we didn't pay for that later on. So I'm glad that we didn't concede later on. But on that occasion, I do think that there's some sort of introspection required, and I'm not sure whether a retrospective ban can be handed out for something like that. But it's something that needs to be seen, and many, you know, more often than not, it's South Americans who are blamed and accused of diving, but clearly on that case Harry Arter did make the most out of it.
And just to touch on the third, this where I probably maybe a little bit biased. Look, for me it was a stupid pass by Granit. However, if you look back at it, you have a look at the options he had when he made the pass, and you have a look at Bellerin running down the right hand side screaming out for the ball. At that point I thought, don't pass it, but then he obviously made the pass and got the intercept. But what other options, you know, he could have kicked it out over the sideline, but I looked at it and thought, I blame Bellerin personally, because I felt that Bellerin was, he was running down the right, and he made Granit, well, not made Granit, but Granit seemed to see him, look up, see him, and thought, oh, I'll pass it over to Bellerin, which was an intercept. Look, a lot of people may disagree with me, but that's the way I type of looked at it. But
Guendouzi was available right next to him, and he was unmarked. I mean, I would say he was two-thirds on the way to Bellerin and in that same direction. I mean, look, I'll be honest. I thought Grant had a very good game, and he made one error that led to, you know, that goal that we conceded. But based on the logic you just laid out, Tez, I thought Guendouzi was the safer option there.
Yeah, okay. Yep. No, like I said, I'm open for ideas, but I just thought, I seen Bellerin running down the right, and I thought, he's going to pass to Bellerin, look at Bellerin running down the right, and that was the option that he did. If it had gone, he could have went to Guendouzi as well.
I'm in agreement with Schwinn, but also, if like the ball to Bellerin was on, he just woefully underhit it. So I can't even blame Bellerin, because the run wasn't bad. It was a terrible ball. But look, everyone that listens regularly will know I always say there's three or four faults for a goal. And I agree with Maddie that Nacho made a small mistake. Xhaka's was the big mistake. Letting the cross in so easy is a small mistake. It's very rare, unless like, say, when Cech passed it out to Arter and he missed the one-on-one. That would be one person's mistake. But it's very rare, unless it's a keeper, that it's one person's mistake that leads to a goal. And as I said, I think Xhaka was the main part, but there was two or three smaller mistakes in that goal as well. But as I said, blaming Bellerin, who everyone knows I'm not a fan of, for me is ridiculous, because the pass was on. Xhaka just underhit it by at least 20 yards. And you can't blame anyone else for that. And as Schwinn said, the ball that should have been played was a simple square ball to Guendouzi. It's game management as well, which I always moan about. Our game management is terrible. But you've got 30 seconds to go to half time. Don't take a risk.
It was stupid to take the risk. Like, absolutely, I don't disagree with that. I couldn't
work out why I did it. I agree with Schwinn that it's a very unfortunate for Granit because I thought he had a very good game, but that's what gets remembered.
Yeah.
In the same way as when I was just talking about Ozil, because he didn't get an assist, everyone will go, he went missing again, which is bollocks. But you know what I mean? It's what writes the headlines, and the headline is that Xhaka gave away a goal, which is very unfortunate, but it happened.
No, that's right. Okay, Matty, hopefully we answered your questions, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for that. And just last thing before you wind up, Tez, I hope you will be following Jamshedpur FC in Indian Super League now since Team Kyle has joined.
Say it again, who am I following?
Yes.
So Team Kyle has joined Jamshedpur FC from Indian Super League, so I believe you will be following it now closely.
Tez? When's that on?
I think mid-September, I believe.
No, I'll have a look at it then. I'll have to have a squizzy, mate. You keep us updated on it, though, eh?
Yeah.
No worries. I don't get much of that over here, mate. I'm BN Sport may pick it up or something, but I don't remember seeing it on BN Sport last season. So if BN Sport pick it up, mate, I'll watch anything, buddy.
Yeah. You're okay. Thanks, guys. Yeah.
Good on you, mate. Thanks for the call, champ. Yeah. See you, mate.
Yeah. Thanks. Bye.
Now, just quickly, and I know it is very, very early predictions here. I'm not going to ask you a prediction on whether we're going to go to the final. I'm going to ask you, obviously, Emery's, you know, they say he's the man to win this Europa League. Sevilla, they're pretty good. Chelsea are in there, and we still have Champions League teams to come in, obviously. They're the two main dangers at this stage, you think?
I mean, odds-wise, us and Chelsea are the two favourites. I'm not particularly fearful of Sevilla, but then Man United fans wouldn't have been last season and they knocked them out of the Champions League, so maybe that's probably a bit foolish of me. But you have to wait and see who comes down, in my opinion, because you never know. Look, last season Atletico Madrid came down and won it, and there was a couple of other good sides that came down. The Red Bull side from Germany, as Schwinn likes to call them, came down last year. So, and they're in it again this year. They're a decent side. So, as you said, it's way too early. But betting wise, I know Chelsea are favourites and we're second favourites.
Fuck being in that group with them two Red Bull teams. See that?
Yeah.
Who else was it? The Celtic as well, no?
I think so. I don't know. Okay. To be honest, I didn't even watch the draw. Like, it is what we're going to end up playing sides, and someone's going to tell me at some point. I didn't even watch the draw, so I haven't looked at the other groups really.
Yep. Okay. You ready to answer some questions?
I'll give it a go.
Yep. Okay. Polisic. Yep. Why the fuck don't we drop Xhaka? And then
go on, then.
Steve Clear says, drop Xhaka or Guendouzi for Torreira.
So, well, I mean, one of them, to bring Torreira in, naturally, one of them does have to be dropped. Or rotated, or whatever nice way you want to put it.
Yep, okay. You want to answer why the fuck we don't drop Xhaka? Or we touch on that every week, seems to, don't we?
He passes the ball forward. In a nutshell, he passes the ball forward.
I'll go because he's the best in the world. You can't drop the best player in the world. You know, you've got Messi, you've got Neymar, you've got fucking Granit Xhaka. Simple as that. You cannot drop the best fucking player in the world. Let's move on. Schwinn, Josh Jones says, here we go. He's Czech. We knew this was happening. With Czech having another below par game, would you give Leno a run of games, or do you think he's kept with him as Socrates is new and doesn't want too much change at once already suspect defence? In our once already suspect defence.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. I've never seen our goalkeeper selection based on our center defenders, but you know, it that can be argued. But at the same time, Leno is a German speaker, you know, and Socrates is, of course, and so is Mustafi. So I don't think the communication would be a real barrier. You know, I mean, yesterday the first 5-10 minutes were very, very nervy from Czech. You know, apart from the very beginning of the game where he almost lost the ball to Reed, I think it was. He also gave the ball away a couple of times cheaply right to Harry Otter, you know, 5-10 yards away from him. So he also seemed a bit nervy in the tunnel before the game started. And, you know, we shouldn't be necessarily be blaming Cech because this is not his game, as we've spoken about. But Emery keeps persisting with him. And, you know, this is, I mean, I don't want to use the word stinking, but it is stinking a bit of stubbornness. And I'm not questioning the manager, but I'm trying to understand why he's doing what he's doing. And the only thing that you know, screams out to me is that Leno is not trustworthy in goal. You know, we know he has the ball playing ability, but does he have the shot stopping ability? Even if it's not as good as Cech's, you know?
Yeah, no, I haven't seen much of Leno, so it's fair, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, let's start Leno over Cech, because, look, I know what I'm going to get out of Cech. I don't know, other people here, you know, listen to the podcast, they might go, oh, well, Leno is better, and I'll take their word for it. But for me, I can't say, eventually I'm going to see Leno, you know, starting somewhere, whether it be Europa League. Like I said earlier, if he plays, has a good Europa League, then maybe he starts over Cech. But I'll just rattle off. There's a couple of heap of questions here on Cech, actually. It's a silly me thinking there wasn't. Because Joe also says, do you feel that all of Cech's criticism is deserved? Emery must see something in Cech to start him over Leno. We need to put more trust in the new manager. He also had the fifth most clean sheets in the league last season, despite being 10 years older and having a poor season. Josh Jones goes on. So that was Joe. Josh Jones says, with Cech having another blow par game, I already read that. Yeah, we must give Leno a run of run. So, you know, there's a bit of food for thought as well, Schwinn.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. You know, he is a decent goalkeeper, and I think all the criticism that is levied on Cech is deserved, because the criticism is of kicking the ball. It's not against shot stopping, right? As I said, I don't want to blame the manager either. And from what little I've seen of Leno, I don't necessarily think that he doesn't deserve a chance. I think he's a decent goalkeeper, and maybe he's not at the level of Cech is in his shot stopping ability. But the fact that he's not even gotten a look in so far, you have to question what's going on. I remember mentioning a couple of weeks ago on this show that James from Gunner Blog, you know, mentioned on the Arscast that the staff at the Emirates, the staff at Colney, was not at all pleased by what they've seen of Leno. So, you know, there's some information for you which you may or may not believe. You know, I think he's going to make a push for it. You know, as you said, Tez, if there is some competition time that he's going to see in the Europa League, or whether it's one of the domestic competitions, I think he has, you know, everything going for him in that regard to be able to push for the first team in the Premier League.
You know what I like, though? We're having this discussion. We wouldn't be having this discussion if it was a spinner. So we're actually, we have a backup. We have a goalkeeper there waiting who may be ready, who may not be ready, but hey, he's there.
Yeah, but you know what? We still had these discussions last season when Cech wasn't quite. He had some good games. No, but I remember we had some discussions whether, you know, after a Europa League game or something, when Ospina had a blinder, then we'd considered it. But, you know, Cech, for all his faults, was decent last season, especially against some of the big teams, the Chelsea's and the cities, but, you know, maybe some of the other ones. But, you know, when you expect him to play the ball out like that, then 30 seconds into the game and he's making mistakes, and that's when you know he's not cut out for it, and it's week in, week out. So I'm going to keep a keen eye out on our domestic competitions and the Europa League to see how Leno performs.
Yeah, I will be too. Tony, I'd love your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, I think we're stuck between a rock and a hard place, because our defence is so leaky that we're going to face a lot of shots, and Cech has been not perfect, but I mean, you can't label fault for any of the goals we've conceded. He's made some very good saves already this season, so he protects that aspect, but can't play out from the back. Whereas Leno's slightly the other way around. He's much better playing out from the back, but isn't as good a shot stopper. So you've got to sacrifice one or the other. And you can imagine, okay, we may play out from the back better, but then we concede in a lot more of the shots we're having against us, and we're having the number of shots against us in games at the moment is crazy. I don't know about after yesterday, but before yesterday, Cech had made the most saves in the league. So that tells you about the number of shots we're facing. So I think they really are stuck in between a rock and a hard place. I'm not buying that they don't rate Leno. I'm just, as I said, we've got two faults, and one keeper fixes one and one keeper fixes the other. Mm. Obviously, the ideal is a hybrid of the two, but that's what City paid £40 million for Edison for. And that's why Oblak would cost you £80 million. That's why De Gea would be almost priceless. Like, as I said, we need something that we can't afford, and we've got someone that caters for both, but no for each problem, but no one that caters for both. And so I can't see. I don't know if he's going to bite the bullet at some point and change it. I don't know, because as I said, in terms of just keeping, I think Cech's been faultless.
I worry at some stage that when we're playing a Manchester City, a Liverpool, and he makes them silly mistakes with the feet at the ball, that's when he's really
But they're the sides that you also need to make the most saves against. So
I agree. I know.
So you know what I'm saying? As I said, both sides are covered. Like, there's arguments to say that he kept us in the City game for a lot longer than we should have been. He still made them mistakes with the ball at his feet, and I'm not trying to deny that. But you can imagine. So if Leno would have been in goal, in theory, we would have played out better from the back, but we maybe would have been 3-0 down at half time instead of 1-0 down, and then the game's finished.
Yeah.
Because, as I said, one save he made from Laporte was an absolute joke.
Mm.
Like I said, it's difficult because no one covers both of our problems. You worry about them games. I, to be honest, worry more about the other games when the team's only going to have one chance, and if he fucks up and gives it, like against the Cardiff, if Arta puts them 1-0 up yesterday, that's a completely different game. In the big games, at least you can semi-rely on him to save the ball.
Okay, MAA Gunner. Tony, winning every game against teams out of the top four bring us to 84 points. That surely puts us in the top four. Would the team be looking at the games this way? Would teams be looking at the games this way?
I don't know if they do. I say this all the time. I've been banging this drum for years. Everyone worries about he doesn't do well against this, like against the away to the big sides. But that's four or five games. Win the rest of them, and them games don't matter. Maybe they matter in a title chase, but let's be honest, that's not where we are. So, as I said, I don't know if clubs do, but I've been saying this for years, so I completely agree with him.
Who's the teams outside the top? Who's the teams inside the top four, I should say, though?
No, I mean,
there's
going to
be six of them, isn't there?
Yeah, so I assume he means top six. So, but if you lose sort of five teams away, then you've still got 33 other games to play. If you win all of them, I know that would mean beating them all at home, but that's 99 points. That guarantees you the league.
Oh, okay.
I know, again, look, it's an ideal world, and that isn't going to happen. But see what I'm saying? Everyone focuses on the big away games. It's similar with a criticism of Ozil. He doesn't turn up in the big away games. If he is shit in all five of them but excellent in all the rest, I'll take it.
Okay.
Like, people put so much value on them games, and I don't really... Look, it's nice to say you beat them teams. You get a bit of one-upmanship. But for me, it's not important. You win the league over a season, not over one afternoon at Anfield or Old Trafford or the Etihad or the Toilet Bowl.
They're the games that get the most attention, you know.
Of course. But, I mean, as I said, as fans, it feels like sometimes, and I know they don't, and I'm being facetious, but it feels like sometimes fans would rather beat Tottenham away and then lose the next three against West Ham, Southampton and Palace or whatever.
Hmm.
Whereas for me, I'd think if someone said, you know what I mean, I'd rather have the 9 points than the three. I'd rather lose to Tottenham and win the other three. And I'm sure most people would, but sometimes the attitudes aren't like that.
The RC fella, Schwinn, disappointed that Mickey, Bella and Combo wasn't utilised today. I feel they've been working really well together in the final third, creating chances with the cutbacks into the box with Ozil today. Bellerin had to revert to passing back inside, which does little. Thoughts?
I mean, I have a lot of complaints with Bellerin, and you know, I mean, yesterday I can't remember a single instance where he took someone on. It's again, he's being played into space, or if he's being playing behind, he's all right. And to be fair to him, he was involved in probably our best move, which obviously didn't materialize into a goal. I think Aaron Ramsey could have just, lunged at that ball and tried to get his head on it. There was some intricate play in the build-up between Mesut Ozil, Lacazette, and eventually a ball to Bellerin. But again, he was played into space. He was played in behind, and he played in a decent ball. But every time he has a man in front of him, he's just unable to make any use of the ball. You can't possibly you know, base that on Mkhitaryan missing. Bellerin should be able to perform the way he wants without necessarily having a partner without whom he's unable to. And I agree, you know, he has been better when Mickey's there, but it's the same complaint I've had from him even then. If we hadn't won yesterday and if we haven't gotten the result, then maybe I could say that Mkhitaryan deserved a place to start. But that doesn't excuse Bellerin's inability to take a man on.
Okay. Hakon Larsson, Tony, is the first goal more a defensive problem? I don't think Xhaka should get all the blame. Some of it...
Yeah.
Sorry?
No, I was going to answer. I didn't know there was more going on.
Yeah, sorry. I don't think Xhaka should get all the blame. Some of it, yes, because it was transition and the first half is almost over. But we actually have many players behind the ball, and when the cross comes in, we are in balance.
Yeah, so obviously I touched on this when we were speaking to Maddie on the live callers earlier, that as I said, most goals, unless it's a huge, huge error, like check passing out to Art and he scored, there's two or three small mistakes that you can blame. And Xhaka's was the first of them, but as I said, the fullback had all the time in the world to cross it. No one got over to him. Whether you blame Ozil, I don't know. Ozil was on that side, but he wasn't there. Guendouzi got across there a lot of times and he wasn't there. Hector didn't come out to him. So I'm not sure what one of them you can blame, put a small blame on, but there is one there. Nacho overcommitted. Our shaping at the back was poor. So, look, there's definitely a Xhaka mistake there, and I'm not trying to take away responsibility from him. And his is the biggest mistake of the mistakes within that goal. But to put most goals, you can't purely put the blame on one player. And so I agree with Hakon Larsson. Yes, he's at fault, but for me, there's other issues as well that could be looked at and should be looked at.
Okay, Hakon Larsson. Lacazette with another good display. The goal is actually so good. The touch and the finish is on a so high level. Worked his ass off and got the winning goal. Gotta love it. Starting next game as well. Look, we all agree with that. And I Tony, you were a bit controversial, weren't you? But just, I think, oh, didn't, what did you say about, oh, no, you said you wanted them to start up front together. That's right. We didn't touch, though. Who was your man of the match?
Oh, Laka by an absolute mile. I thought he was silly good. He'd done everything right. As I said, me and Schwinn were just talking off air, and I said that I just wish he was a little bit quicker, but his performance was excellent. And if he had that extra yard of pace, he would have got three or four yesterday. Obviously, he hit the post. He had one run in behind where he just wasn't quick enough. But he was very, very good yesterday.
Yeah, no, I agree. Schwinn, you obviously
agree. Yeah, no disagreements there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so we're all agree, Hakon Larsson. Okay. Vish says, Schwinn, why don't the central midfielders or fullbacks avail themselves to receive the ball from Cech?
Make themselves available, I think he means.
Yeah, okay. We see Socky and Mustafi going wide, seem to hold their positions. Man City do it best. If there is no space to pass, Edison hoofs it long to Aguero.
I mean, it's just the way we set up. You know, we split our center backs, and of course that means that our fullbacks go higher. It seemed like in the midweek, you know, there were some videos that were coming out, bits and pieces from the training where Cech was shown practicing, you know, some of his ball playing abilities, whether that was on the ground or from his weak foot, those dinks over the first line of defense of the opposition. And you know, when the game is on and the pressure is on, then he seemed to lack that yesterday. Look, this will come with time. You know, of course, as Vish said, Man City do it best, but at the same time, they have Ederson who can find a dime from 30, 40, 50 yards out. Cech doesn't have that. You know, he just kicks it long and hopes someone will be in the area. On the other hand, Ederson picks out space, you know, in a very accurate manner. Leno, on the other hand, we might see, you know, develop that sort of ability and employ that. I mean, there's a lot of questions around this, and of course, we don't have all the answers to it, but I think what we need with these things is time and see how these things pan out, because we all know Cech doesn't have the ability to do that. And it's just a matter of how long Emery persists with him.
Okay. Tony Utkarsh. Going back,
Utkarsh.
Thanks, Schwinn. Going back to what Emery said when he joined about winning 5-4, do you prefer winning 1-0 or 3-2? What does that mean for someone like Bellerin? Personally, I prefer 3-0, but apparently that is not an option with the players and the system we're playing.
I say this all the time because when I come out of games, people will message me and say, oh, good game though. It sounds stupid. I'm bored of good games. Give me a 2-0 win where you know you're going to win, no drama, you score a goal in each half and it's comfortable and you're never under pressure. I'll take that all day. Like, and actually someone brought up this quote as we was leaving the ground. They went, well, he did say we was going to win 3-2, but I just don't think you can afford to keep giving teams chances because it is going to bite you on the arse. If you're constantly conceding, you're going to have an off day up front.
That's a weakness, even isn't it?
It's nonsense. And to be honest, I don't think he actually thinks that. I think that's trying to get the fans on side, saying, I'm going to play attacking football. I think that's what he meant by that. And there may have been a slight language barrier and whatnot. But, I mean, my point about a boring game stands. Like, as much as, yeah, I want to see exciting football, but it takes a toll on you. And every week, it's like an absolute battle. And I get if people are at games not often, then they want to be entertained when they go, and that's fair enough. But I've seen so many 3-3s and 4-4s, and just like, can we just win? Like, just win easy. Because if you win easy, you save something, you leave something in the tank. Mm. Like yesterday, there was absolutely nothing left in the tank. You see, they worked their nuts off. But if you win that game 2-3-0 comfortable, I know we've got an international break now, so it's poor timing for me to say this, but do you know what I mean?
I'm glad we've got the international break because I'd be worried if we're coming up against the... Who are we playing next? It would be Newcastle. But yeah. Still next week, I'd be worried, you know?
Yeah, that's what I mean. If they are winning 2-3-0 comfortable, then they can save 10% back at the end of the game. And as I said, this is something I've moaned about for a long time, and it may be a personal thing. You might think, oh, I'd love to win 4-3 every week. But, I mean, I hate it. Like, obviously, a 4-3 win is good. Any win is good. But I just wish we was a lot more comfortable and more steady at times.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I'm going to watch an exciting game, it'll be, you know, an Everton or something. Let them win the 4-3 or something. I don't want us to do it. But then I don't want to play Man United style either. So I am a bit torn on that. I don't want to be boring as batshit.
The style and result are two different things. You can still be attractive to football. This is a bad weekend because Liverpool struggled a bit. I know they won, but look at Liverpool West Ham first game of the season. They won 4-0, so it's still exciting.
Yeah.
But they wasn't in a constant battle and they were constantly worried. Like the game was just won and they could take their foot off the gas if they needed to. They bring some players on. Daniel Sturridge came on and scored. Whereas if that game's a 2-1 battle, he doesn't come on. Or a 1-1 battle. Do you know what I mean? So it's give yourself more of a chance to rotate. I'm not saying it has to be boring. I'm just saying I wish that it was a bit less eventful.
Yeah. No, fair enough. Now, each match game, obviously, Savvy looks after our Twitter account. And he's... I'm coming to you, Schwinn. So he put up and he does it because Tony's usually at the games. I'm too lazy, and Schwinn's sitting on the fence thinking about life. So Savvy does it all, but he put up the man of the match thread yesterday, poll. Now Lacazette 95%, Aubameyang 2%, Ramsey 2%, and any other mentioned was 1%. I'm not sure who the 1%, but Schwinn, the reason I bring this up because that's not right, is it? Sand shit. Anyway, we'll run with sand shit. sorry, brother.
Is it shit or is it chit? Is it CH sorry, or SH?
CH.
Yeah, sun shit. Okay, sun shit. I got it.
Not sure what Ramsey did to deserve to be in this poll, though I felt like he could have done miles better, lost the ball several times in good position. That is just my opinion. Your thoughts on Ramsey, Schwinn?
Look, I thought Ramsey was very good yesterday. Obviously, Lacazette deserves the man of the match out and out. And, you know, Ramsey didn't come close to him in terms of his performance. But particularly in the first half, and when, you know, till the time we had scored our second goal, I thought Ramsey was very good. I thought he worked very hard. In the first half, he was the only one who seemed to threaten creatively and combined very well with Nacho Monreal. Defensively, I thought he did a lot of running for Mesut Ozil and Aubameyang, because as Tony mentioned, when Ozil would tuck in, Ramsey was dropping deeper and he would also come and, you know, combine in attacks. I thought the free roll sort of suited him yesterday. You know, I'm not sure how much of a free roll he'll get in the future, because I don't think we can give it both to Mesut Ozil and Aaron Ramsey at the same time. They might share some of those responsibilities. But, you know, I'm trying to look through his stats here as we speak, and I'm not sure how much he lost the ball, if I'm honest. You know, if you guys have that off the top of your head.
I've brought it up myself. So shots inside, 2, key passes, 4, total passes, 63%, 50 successful. What are you looking for? Loss of ball.
Dispossessed once, from what I see here.
Yeah, I've got one as well. 1 tackle, 1 clearance, 1 foul conceded, 1 fouled, 2 dribbles. He wasn't too bad. He was everywhere. I'll give you that. He did work his ass off.
Well, I think every now and then we try to compartmentalize players into numbers. I mean, of course, we are going through statistics right now. But, you know, if our attacker doesn't get a goal, or if our midfielders don't get an assist, we try to shun them. And, you know, not every game are we going to score 5-6 goals where everyone can combine in those numbers. And I thought maybe some of this criticism towards Ramsey is coming from there. You know, in the first half, as I said, you know, some very good interplay between him and Monreal down the left. There was an instant when I think Lacazette went down because he got an arm to his face. That was a very good ball across the box. Lacazette's shot that hit the post. Right? Again, it was Ramsey who found him in tons of space around the edge of the box. So I thought he worked very hard, you know, and until the time Mesut Ozil was able to involve himself into the game and obviously picked up some of those key positions that led to the goal, I thought Ramsey was the only creative spark in our team, if I'm honest.
He probably, in Cardiff, you know, they obviously scored a couple of goals and they go away from that match pretty proud of themselves. But Ramsey, I would hate to be defending against Ramsey, because he was everywhere. Thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's got an elite engine, you know, 2-3 seasons ago. I mean, every season he's in the top 5 in terms of distance covered. And you know, if he's fit, then he obviously plays a lot of games. He was at fault to an extent for, I think it was the second goal, if I'm not mistaken, where he was on Morrison, which, I mean, tactically that's suicidal. Why would you place Aaron Ramsey on covered to, you know, their number one aerial threat? But that's not his fault. That's, you know, the team not putting the right man on Morrison there. But he's an absolute elite player in terms of his engine. You know, we can doubt some of his ability because a few too many touches of the, you know, but things he does well and things he does, you know, that keep you ticking, not losing the ball, those balls, those nicks and flicks around a defender that's charging you down, that set you in stride. He did that 3-4 times yesterday when he just got to the ball and a second earlier than the opposition who was chasing him down. And that sets you up, you know, to run at players. And I thought he did that very, very well yesterday.
Hard to disagree. Tony, you the same thoughts or are you different?
I thought he was good. I wouldn't have had him in a list for man in a match, but then my list would have been Lacazette, 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 and Lacazette. To be honest, my friend who I was with, who I go to most games with, he thought Ramsey was very good. So it is obviously just a difference of opinions. His game management was actually very good, which is something I heavily criticised last week, but he had a run down the left, right at the end, and he wasn't going anywhere, but he just kept moving the ball so they couldn't get to him. Ran down into channel, waste a bit of time, then played a simple ball back to Monreal. I thought he came alive when, funnily enough, we let Ozil take up the free roll and Ramsey's role became a bit deeper and more defined. I think Ramsey came to life then more. He done a few things that annoy me. Hates taking contact. So towards the end, we were 3-2 up and he was trying, like, not flicks in behind, but he was trying little balls in behind, whereas just take the ball down, get your back into the defender. He's going to go through you in that minute in the game and take the free kick and slow the game down. He'd done it twice in a row, and again, I wanted to run on and throttle him. But then the third time, he learned. I don't think he was excellent. As I said, he wasn't a contender for man of match for me, but he was decent. I'd probably score him, whatever I'm scoring Ozil, I'd probably score Ramsey about the same, to be honest.
I was actually disappointed Granit Xhaka wasn't on that fucking list, to be honest. Why didn't he get a fucking shout on that list? Or maybe he's the other. Good on you, Savvy. We love Savvy. Okay, Tony, yes, we've answered. What sort of team do we think we'll play in the Europa League? Says MAA Gunner. Rotation. You know what's going to be interesting? If El Nani comes out and has a blinder, then what do we fucking do? Guendouzi, Granit, El Nani.
That won't change.
You don't think it'll change? You don't think he could play himself into the first team?
No, I think there's probably, without putting myself under pressure for names, I don't think there's anyone that can play their way in to being a starter, to be honest. I don't think Leno's going to play his way in. I think if he's changed, it will be changed. It won't be as a result of what Leno does in the Europa League. But he's maybe the only one you could consider is playing his way in. I don't think any other position's overly up for grabs, to be honest.
Okay. Not over Lichtsteiner?
Bellerin? No. Hector's too important going forward. I'm not a Hector fan, but the way we're using him is vital.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Yeah, no, I have to agree there. Okay, how is Emery? Vish, how is Emery? This is for you, Tony. Emery's Arsenal any different from Wenger's Arsenal? Wenger got slated for persisting with players that didn't suit our system, yet Emery persists in playing people with obvious differences, weaknesses in our defence. Ecstatic for the win, but a better team would have punished us.
Look, I mean, I agree in that I don't really think anything's changed, but if we're going to have to get better to get worse to get better or stand still to get better, then I'm all for that, because as long as the end result is getting better. I don't think you can overly blame him for not having the players, because he's had one window. He doesn't buy the players anyway. And the players weren't good enough and still aren't good enough on the whole, in my opinion. So I don't really want to use this answer to bash Emery, but I don't think much has changed, and we'll see. This question is probably a better one in 6 months' time or a year's time. Okay. I think now there's not really much you can say about it.
What did Snow say then? I heard a little...
Yeah, he doesn't really give a shit, to be honest.
Okay. Vish, would Ramsey not be a better option coming off the bench to wear down tired defences? Would Ozil be better in the middle, Mkhitaryan out wide right with the Granit and Torreira sitting deep? I'll go to you, Tony, because Schwinn's had a fair bit on that one.
Well, I mean, look, one of Ramsey's strengths is engine, and I see what he means about coming on and playing against tired legs, but the joy of Ramsey is he can run the legs off people, because if they're tracking him, they're going to have to basically be moving the whole time. Whereas, say, a Ozil, for example, who doesn't make them breaks forward, the defender has to do less running to begin with. So, again, not for me. And Ramsey's one of them. He to get the pace of the game, he needs to be in the game. I don't think he's a great sub. It's very hard to come on and just pick up the pace of the game. It's one of the reasons I rated Fabregas so highly. He could come on onto any pitch and set the tempo, which is very difficult to do, like when you're coming onto a pitch fresh. And Ramsey's not the best at that. Look, for me, our strongest lineup is what we played yesterday, but Torreira for Guendouzi. For me, Mickey doesn't make it. So I would, as I said, I would slightly change roles of players. I would drop Ramsey a little bit deeper but give him free rein to bomb forward because he's got two behind him. But also tell him, use your engine to cover the wings because we don't have natural width. And he can do that. It may mean using more of his energy going side to side than backwards and forwards, but he's got... Like, again, I mean, Schwinn commented on earlier saying you can't really give Ozil and Ramsey both a free role, but I think you can if you have two behind them. And knowing that Ramsey has the engine he does, it's a free role, but when the ball's going down the other end of the pitch, get your ass back there, use your engine, run and get there. But when we're attacking, if you pop up on the left, if you pop up on the right, if you're as the nine at times making them late runs, it's fine. That's what I would like to see, and I've said this for a couple of weeks now. And I think that's pretty close to what we were at times yesterday. as I said, Ozil moved, drifted in, Ramsey freed up a bit, and Aubameyang tucked in. And I think a lot of yesterday, when we were good, we played how I've wanted us to play. That doesn't mean it works long term. I'm just saying it worked yesterday.
Well, give me a formation, because I'm not talking use now. But I'm just thinking, because you were talking about it earlier with Aubameyang on the left. How do we fit him in two at the front with Ozil and Ramsey in there?
Well, the same as I've said the whole time. I'd like to see us play 4-3-1-2 with Ramsey alongside Torreira and Xhaka. But as I said, he has that freedom to roam and use his engine. Ozil as the one in the 10 role. And again, we know Ozil's going to roam as a 10. And then Lacazette and Aubameyang up top. And I don't mean they have to stay central. I mean, Aubameyang obviously will run the channels if needed. Yep. Lacazette will go into the channels to hold the ball up, but not really sprinting behind. So it's not fixed. It's not like I see a formation board and they have to stay within them certain areas. But for me, that's how it would work. And as I said, I think a lot of yesterday, that's how we played. But once Ozil started drifting in, Ramsey was a bit deeper, but in the middle of the pitch, but still ahead of Torreira and Xhaka. And Aubameyang came in 10 yards from the left and Lacazette stayed up front. And I think a lot of our attacking play yesterday, that's the system we tried to use. I'd say probably in the second half. In the first half, I think it was a lot more rigid.
You know, I was just thinking, I have not seen one question or one mention of Klozinac all season.
Well, he's been out for it. He's out for 8 weeks. There's no point.
Oh, okay. He's injured, is he?
Yeah, he got injured in the Chelsea game, I believe. He's won the preseason friendly. The Chelsea preseason friendly. Which was the second last one.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that. That's why. Okay. I was just thinking, it was just a name that I haven't heard of for ages. Or what was?
Yeah, no, I think it was 8 weeks. That's why, obviously, when there was a rumours of Danny Welbeck being used at left-back, as I said, I've explained previously why that happened, but it was because Monreal and Kolasinac were both injured at that time.
Okay, yep. Okay, Schwinn, the RC fella, trust us to let Cardiff score their first two EPL goals against us. It's further proof of how bad we are defending. 8 goals shipped in 4 games, aside from Xhaka's poor pass leading to the first goal, is to blame for the 2 goals, simply down to poor teamwork. Also, somebody else didn't mention that. Hakon Larsson, Cardiff without a goal in the first 3 rounds. It was written in the stars that they would score against us.
Yeah, of course, you know, that had to be against us, you know, and I think it was Ward who scored the second goal, it was his first goal in Cardiff colours, something milestone for him in terms of his club career at Cardiff. So, of course, you know, Arsenal is that team against who you get over the hump. But, you know, we struggled in set pieces, right? And there is some sort of teamwork to be... Well, defensively, I mean, of course, you know, we didn't really win the first ball a whole lot. But that was sort of expected because we didn't have the height and the build to challenge every Cardiff player. What bothered me, especially in that second goal and you know, some of the other instances, was the second ball. You know, a lot of our players were caught on their heels. I think the second goal we conceded, only Nacho was the one who was trying to get a block in before Ward got his head to it. And Nacho was not very close to him. I think Guendouzi was close by. So was Grant Xhaka. And so were our central defenders, both Socrates and Mustafi. And all four of them were caught on the heels. You know, these reverse balls or these second balls, I thought we were a bit slow to react to. And you don't expect that throughout the game. You know, you expect someone of the leaders in there, whether that's Cech or Socrates or someone to give their teammates an earful, and that was very, very disappointing to see. I'm just glad we didn't buckle down at the very end, because it did seem like Cardiff were pushing us and they were winning those free kicks, you know, in key areas from where they could fling a ball in. But we are defensively vulnerable. I don't think that's a secret. And as I said at the top of this podcast, that I was just happy to see that we got our attacking pace picked up and we were able to score more goals than we conceded on the day.
Okay, I'm just going to rattle through a couple of questions, boys, because we've touched on just about all these subjects, but if you think that you want to add anything, Tony, Even Ilshwin, just shout out, boys. So, Sultan, what does Cech need to do to get dropped? At this rate, even if he scores an own goal, he will probably start the next game. Ooh, that is a bit harsh. I just as Tony said before, I think, you know, look, you've got Leno, who can obviously play the ball at his feet. You've got Cech, who's a good shot stopper. What do you do? Chris Palmer, who is more qualified to link the defence and the attack, Ramsey or Ozil? Neither seem to be doing great job in this system. Tony, anything there?
I mean, look, to be honest, it's Xhaka's job, and that's probably the thing he does well. There is obviously a lot of flaws, but that's one of the things he does well. I've said this a million times, I don't want Ozil linking the defence and the attack, because that means he's coming deep. And when he does do that, he does a decent job of it, but everyone moans he's not getting assists anymore. Mm. Or he's not doing this, he's not doing that. So, and Ramsey's not a link player in terms of possession with his ball. He's a link in terms that he does the running between the two. So, I mean, for me, and it looks like Torreira will be able to pick a pass. So it looks like that hopefully Xhaka and Torreira can split that responsibility if they're both on the pitch, or whatever one is on the pitch, that's their role.
Yeah. Cosman Buta, who would you drop to accommodate Torreira?
Guendouzi.
Schwinn?
Yep. Guendouzi.
Fuck. You boys are lucky you didn't say Greta. Wouldn't be a podcast next week. Well, it's not going to be anyway. Okay. Shree. There were a couple of times I noticed Ramsey tracking back and covering for Aubameyang and Ozil on the wings while they tucked in a more centrally. Did any of you guys notice that? If you did,
yeah, what did exactly you what I said it? Earlier. Exactly what I said earlier. Ozil drifted in. Ramsey sat maybe 5 yards deeper and then used his engine to cover the flanks that were abandoned. And Aubameyang tucked in, so it made it more of a two up front. And that's what I've been saying the whole time, is how I would like to see us play.
Okay.
Jeez, I mean, it's a lot of work for Ramsey, but if anyone can get through it, it's him. And if not, then you find a replacement for him in the 75th or 80th minute.
Is that the way the manager set up, you reckon? They've told him this is the way I want it done?
It seemed like a clear change in the second half. As I said, it just seemed like Ozil was not done anything wrong, but wasn't in the game. And then all of a sudden, he was like, everything was involved Ozil. And then, as I said, Aubameyang had clearly tucked in a tiny... I wouldn't say he was central, but he was at least 10 yards more in the field than he was previously in the game. So whether it was something that was said at half-time or whatever it was, but to me, it looked like a clear change.
Yep. Chris Palmer, surprisingly surprised by Torreira's distribution. Not a question. I just liked it. Yeah, I agree. I think he was really good. And you boys agreed too, didn't you?
Yep.
Jonas 82.
Yep.
Is this the best lineup we can put out at the moment? At the moment. Well, you've got, depending on Torreira, I'd imagine, coming back from international break, as Tony said earlier. MAA Gunner, how do you think Alexis Sanchez would have fit into Emery's plans? Who's going to tackle that one, boys?
I don't know. Does Emery need a dog nonce in his team? I mean, he'd fit really well if we were looking for a dog nonce, but I don't think we are.
What if, eh? Sanchez, I'll be honest.
I was actually talking to my friends about Alexis this weekend, and the Alexis we see now is not the Alexis we saw at Arsenal 2-3 years ago. That Alexis fitted in any team.
Yeah.
This one is not as sharp, he's not as quick, and he's just not as effective. And I genuinely, and people can think I'm being bitter all they want, I don't think this Alexis, he would probably still get in the team, but I don't think he would fit in the team. Whereas the Alexis of, as I said, 2-3 years ago, would start every week in pretty much anything.
Mm-hmm. Justin, do you think hostile crowds play a factor in our bad away performances?
No, not really, because last year we were shit everywhere and not everyone's hostile. And if it were the case, you'd always lose at the same grounds. I don't know why it is that we're bad away from home. And to be honest, this season we've had a win away from home and we've had a narrow loss against Chelsea, so maybe something's turned the corner there, but I don't think the crowd has a major factor to play in that, if I'm honest.
Okay, Glenn says, what does Torreira need to do to start? Well, he just
what he did yesterday.
I think he's done it, hasn't he? Yeah. Czech just focus on shot stopping. Surely it's time for Leno. So Glenn's calling for Leno.
I think with Leno, and look, I hope he comes in and he has an amazing time shot stopping. But for me, I think at the moment it's just the grass is greener, and when he starts playing out from the back, like, well, everyone will start applauding. But then when he's not saving the shots, check, well, it's like, oh well, what do we do now? We've already called for this other geezer to be put out, and now we've replaced him with. Do you know what I mean? It's a very tough decision. I don't think there's a right and wrong one, to be honest. Because as I said, it's just two very different skill sets, and
is Leno that bad? Like the way people are saying, he can't start the ball for his life.
He's not that bad. But Czech is a. I know people don't really like to give Czech a lot of credit, but he is a top draw shot stopper. He's a very big man.
Well, he's the best in the league a few years back, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's a very big man. He gets down very well as well, which is unusual for big keepers. They're usually not the most agile, and he for some reason is. I'm not saying Leno's awful, but he isn't as good a shot stopper as Czech.
Okay. Chris Palmer, do you think there has been instructions from the coach for a more clinical, I don't know what he's saying here. He's basically fouls. We saw loads more today, and it's actually quite refreshing.
I've been moaning about this since. Since time again, but at least since we started the podcast. This is another issue. So Granit yesterday got his booking for breaking up an attack. Brilliant. Like, for me, brilliant. Done exactly the right thing. I've seen people moan, oh, Granit got booked again, shot Cora, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So it's what do you want? Like, I agree. Like, so the question, clearly, he agrees that we should be making these fouls. But then other people, it depends who's making the fouls. Because when Granit does it, it's our fucking idiot got booked again, can't be trusted. When, I don't know, Ramsey does it, it's our brilliant, well done. For me, it's brilliant, well done, whoever. When Hector's handball, they were away down the left. Brilliant, well done, Hector, take the booking. And as I said, I don't like Hector, but you've got to give him credit for doing that. But people seem to pick and choose when they want players to be more cynical, which is nonsense. You either are or you're not.
Mm.
Not even pick and choose when, pick and choose who, which is the problem. There's obviously a right time and a wrong time, but it's the player that seems to be the problem.
There wasn't any yellow cards that I remember yesterday, and then I went, oh, fuck, that was stupid by the player.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I said Granit's was like a bit of a swipe, but I moaned about Ramsey against West Ham, where he half tried to take someone down and didn't get away with it. And I always think, make sure you do it. If you're going to get the booking anyway, so fucking make sure. Don't leave any doubt if this geezer's going to end up on the floor. Make him be on the floor. If you have to jump on his back, I don't care. If you're going to take the booking, do it.
What do you guys think Emery thinks on this? So, hack on Larson. We saw it pretty clear. Czech can fuck up pretty simple pass many times. He wasn't pressed that hard. He gets stressed pretty quickly, and that's okay. But if so, we have to use Leno. Not sure how much better of a shot stopper Czech is, actually. He has been good, though. So we've pretty much touched on that. AFC Quicksot.
Coyote.
For fuck. Is that Coyote? For fuck. I see it as Quicksot. Okay.
I think the listeners know what we have to deal with now on a daily basis or on a weekly basis in terms of our recordings.
What needs to change for us to have more control over momentum of our games and dominate our opposition for the majority of the game? It is a game of management issue, or is it a quality of our players, Schwinn?
I mean, I thought our game management was not that bad yesterday. Of course, you know, in terms of our, it was almost like a tale of two halves, you know, where in the defensive half, we were struggling to, as Tony said, I mean, we were able to get some bookings and snuff out some attacks, but in the offensive third, I thought we were fine, not necessarily biting the bullet and trying to play some ambitious passes, but choosing our moments and playing safe when we had the lead. I think we can improve, of course, but I don't really think that's quite an issue right now. I think the issue is more to do with embedding yourself into the system and what the manager wants from you, and that was obviously on display in the second half more so in the first half. So I think if there's one thing to take away from here is that the manager is happy to tweak things and judge based on the, you know, on the first half how things are supposed to be changed, and the players seem to be believing into that as well.
Okay, I'm just scrolling through the questions because there's a lot of questions, guys, that we've already touched on we've pretty much answered already. So I've got one here, Tony, from Savish. Just listened to Emery's interview. He said Ozil felt better with his position on the pitch. Does that mean he will start at number 10 now?
The answer is obviously I don't know. He looked a million times better there. Not only did he look better, as so often is with Ozil, when he looks better, we look so much better as a team. So I would be trying to find a way to get him in there because we looked a whole different proposition when Ozil started playing.
Okay. Kurnos, Torreira is the destroyer we've lacked in all our games so far. He gives the opposition no options. Brilliant in the drawing fouls and progressing the ball forward. The assist for Laka is an example. I have to agree. Our defence continues to disappoint, however. Emery said at the start of the season he would rather win 4-3 than 1-0. Is this something we have to accept tactically moving forward? You touched on that, Tony. Okay, Savesh, not a hater of Ramsey. Actually, like him a lot at number 10 role. Doesn't suit him at all. Plus, we have played our best attacking football with him on the bench against Chelsea with Mickey and Ozil switching positions. Do you guys think he should be dropped again? I'm not a hater, is I? Tony?
No, we had 20 minutes against Chelsea where he was good and he wasn't on the pitch, so you can't really argue with that. But not for me. As I said, I've said about 10 different times on this podcast how I would like to see the team fit in. And Ramsey would be a key part of that, not just a part, he'd be a very important part and an almost irreplaceable part of how I would like the team to play. I think it's very dangerous basing something on 20 minutes of football, which is what it was really. We was dangerous for maybe 20, maybe 25 minutes against Chelsea, and I think it's very, very dangerous basing everything on that.
Okay. Well, boys, that's about it for the questions. And I thank all the listeners for asking the questions. If we didn't answer yours, like I said, we've already touched on it or spoke about it previously. So we're just, you know, rehashing over old ground, to be honest. Okay, so we're not going to be back until 2 weeks, international break. We're going to have a couple of weeks off, boys.
Yeah, I think it'll be 2 weeks today unless you record without me because the Newcastle game's on a Saturday, but I'll be travelling back on the Sunday, so I won't be able to record. So it'll either be you two or we'll record 2 weeks today. So it'll be on the Monday. Right, it'll be 2 days after the game.
No worries. So before the Newcastle, do you want to do a quick, you know, Rafa's going to be setting up 10 at the back, obviously, like he always seems to fucking do lately. What do we go to Newcastle and what's your thoughts there, Tony?
We've got to expect to win. This where we're at. We should be winning at grounds like that, but it won't be easy. There, as you said, Rafa's very organised. You can call it 10 at the back or whatever you want, but they're very organised. They only just lost to City the other day. They only lost to Tottenham by a goal late on. They lost to Chelsea by a goal late on. So they don't make things easy for you. It's what Rafa's very good at. They won't be easy to break down and they'll look to hit Rondon long and him hold up the ball and they join in play that way, people like Iosi or Kennedy buzzing around. So we have to be vigilant. We'll see what happens. It's not going to be an easy game.
Mm-hmm. You got a prediction?
Same as always.
How about you, Schwinn? Thoughts on the Newcastle?
I'll go for a 2-1 win, I think. It's going to be a very tough one, and I think we might just escape with the skin of our teeth. But you know, in terms of a lineup, I don't quite yet see Torreira starting. Of course, you know, we have to caveat that who's available and whether he's going to be traveling or not. But I suspect he's not quite there in terms of his language and everything else. I do expect Mkhitaryan to come in, you know.
Yeah, and Schwinn, you're
back, and we might need more than one outlet too.
Your internet's playing up like a fucking bitch, mate. So we've got to obviously, yeah, my thoughts. I think we start with what we did yesterday. I'd like to see Torreira come in, Guendouzi out. We beat Newcastle. I'm going to say 3-1. I think Newcastle will get the... Oh, shit. They do defend well, don't they? No, I'll go 3-1. I'll go 3-1. Hopefully we get the win, boys, and that'll put us up on 9 points. That'd be fucking good. We're sitting ninth on the ladder, so... Okay, lads, you got anything else, Tony? You're good, mate?
All good.
All good. Schwinn, you back with me?
All good, yep.
Righto, boys. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for downloading. You'll follow us at clockend_talk. You can get me at Gunatez. You can get Schwinn at AFC Schwinn. Is that right, Schwinn?
That's right.
Good stuff, boys. Okay, see you in 2 weeks. Thank you. Thank you.